भागवतम ग्रंथराज की जाए गौर भ्रमनंदी ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 6, the Purusha Shukta confirmed, text number 27. Gatiyo matiyascheva pariyaschitam sramapanam purushava yabhairete Sambara Sambritamaya Gatya Matayas Chaiva Priyas Chitam Samarpanam Purushava Yavirete Sambara Sambritamaya Gatya Matiyas Cheva Priyas Chitam Samarpanam Purushavayave Ete Sambara Sambritamaya Progress to the ultimate goal, Vishnu. Matiya, worshipping the demigods. Cha, as also. Eva, certainly. Prayas chittam, compensation. Samarpanam, ultimate offering. Purush, the personality of Godhead. Avayava, from the parts of the body of the personality of Godhead. Ete, these. Sambara, the ingredients. Sambrita, were arranged. Maya, by me. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this verse, glad someone's awake. Thus I had to arrange all these necessary ingredients and paraphernalia of sacrifice from the personal bodily parts of the personality of Godhead. By invocation of the demigods' names, the ultimate goal, Vishnu, was gradually attained, and thus compensation and ultimate offering were complete. Now the purport. In this verse, special stress is given to the person of the Supreme Lord, and not to his impersonal Brahma Jyoti, as being the source of all supplies. Narayan, the Supreme Lord, is the goal of sacrificial results, and therefore the Vedic hymns are ultimately meant for attaining this goal. Human life is thus made successful by pleasing Narayan and getting entrance into the direct association of Narayan in the spiritual kingdom of Vaikuntha. I'll just read the verse again. Gatiyo matiyaschiva prayaschitam samarpanam purushava yuverete sambara sambritamaya. Thus, I had to arrange all these necessary ingredients and paraphernalia of sacrifice from the personal bodily parts of the personality of Godhead. By invocation of the demigods' names, the ultimate goal of Vishnu was gradually attained, and thus compensation and ultimate offering were complete. So Srila Prabhupada gives a very concise purport here to point out that special stress is given to the Supreme Lord, the person, not his impersonal Brahma Jyoti, as the source of all supplies. So that person is Narayan, and the Supreme Lord, the goal of all sacrificial results, and therefore all the Vedic hymns are ultimately meant for attaining this goal. And ultimately, as Prabhupada points out, human life is made successful by pleasing Narayan and getting entrance into the direct association of Narayan in the spiritual kingdom of Vaikuntha. So very concise purport, but the essence, everything, the essence is here. So, but this essential information is very rarely understood. And as it describes in the Bhagavad Gita, trying to find that verse. Manushyanam sahasrashu kaschid yatadi siddhaye yatanam api siddhanam kaschin mam viti tatvataha. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. So out of many thousands of karmis, or to speak of those who are supposed to be properly engaged in the Varnashram system as karmis. Now, of course, people are not following any real rules or regulations at all. So, out of many, many millions among men, one may endeavor for perfection. They try to understand their spiritual nature. And of those who have achieved perfection, so those who understand, amongst the many, many millions of karmis, one may come to the point and understand, I am not this body, I am a spirit soul. So very, very rare. But amongst those, if you take the many, many thousands of jnanis who were extremely rare in comparison to the karmis, hardly even one knows Krishna in truth. So this understanding of Krishna is very, very difficult, very, very rare. So, because, now, those jnanis, of course, they may understand that I am different from this mature body, I am spiritual, but they make the mistake of thinking that because spirit is the opposite of matter, matter has form, and therefore spirit would have no form. This is the material calculations. Therefore, they can conceive of spirit as being formless or one, homogeneous Brahman, spiritual energy. Even that realization of Brahman is actually quite rare, because the Buddhas, they do not even understand the Brahman concept, that there is a spiritual substance, Brahman. Therefore, they try to attain Nirvana. And you know, originally Buddha appeared, and the Karmis were misusing the Vedas for animal sacrifice. And so Buddha, seeing that they were, you know, had no real concept of the goal of the Vedas, they were actually quite in the bodily concept of life, he led them away from the Vedas and taught them the concept of Nirvana, that at least understand this. You have no understanding of Brahman. You cannot see that within each living entity there is a spirit soul. That is a Brahman conception. You know, you're utilizing Vedic sacrifices to cause harm to other living entities who are non-different from you, and that they are all Brahman. That is described in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that a learned person sees that in the dog, the dog eater, the elephant, the Brahman, there is, you know, a oneness, a spirit soul. They cannot understand that, therefore, but at least you should understand this, that the material world is not your place to reside. So you should attain liberation from material existence. At least understand that. That is called Nirvana. What is beyond that, you are not capable to understand. I will not even speak that. So, but later, Sankaracharya, he taught Brahma Nirvana. Yes, stop material existence, but that means to come to the Brahman platform, the spiritual platform, Brahma Nirvana. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, taught that even more so than that, you come to the Brahma Nirvanam, that is stated in the second chapter, at the end of the second chapter, that one attains, you know, the devotee, by practicing devotional service, they come to the platform of Brahma Nirvanam in devotional service. So there is Brahma Nirvanam plus devotional service, plus activity, spiritual activity. This is the highest understanding. But the impersonalist generally cannot understand you know, variety, form, senses, you know, on the spiritual platform, and therefore assuming that everything is you know, without form, without individuality, therefore I must be one with God, and if we call God Narayan, then I must be Narayan. So this is the, you know, understanding. So devotee never thinks like that, because devotees understand that you know, I am covered. If I am Brahman and I am eternal and full of knowledge and bliss, I have fallen from that position. But if Brahman is the greatest, Because Brahman, indicates that which is, the greatest spiritual energy. It cannot be covered. If it's the greatest, then if it becomes covered by Maya, then Maya becomes the greatest. We call Maya Brahman. But so it doesn't make sense. They understand that. Just as the sunshine cannot be covered by a cloud, it is something, smaller and insignificant. The impersonalists, even if they attain liberation, it is somewhat theoretical. They don't have any practical understanding how the spirit soul engages in spiritual activities. And they cannot understand that, yes, we are one in quality with the Supreme Lord, but not in quantity. So we are one and different. We are one in quality and different in quantity. And just like if we compare a piece of gold, we may say it has the same quality as the gold in the gold mine, but we cannot say it is equal in quantity. Or we take one drop of water and we say that it has the same quality as the ocean, but we cannot say, the Mayavadis say, the impersonalists, they say that when the one drop enters the ocean, sometimes you have the waves and a drop of salt water, the ocean water bounces up and then it comes back in. So they think, yes, it emerges again. But actually this is just, it never merges. The drop of water actually doesn't merge with the ocean, because if you, it's just because they cannot perceive what is actually happening. If you perceive, if you take that drop of water that enters the ocean, it has the same quality of the ocean, but there are so many molecules, and those molecules keep their identity. They're very, very small. It appears that they've merged, but actually they're very, very small. They never merge. They never mix with the other molecules. They always keep their individuality. And the same sunshine, they say that the sky so when the sun rises, we have the sunshine in the sky. In a pot there is sky, and all around the pot there is sky. And so the impersonalists think that if you break the pot, or in that sense dissolve the material body, the subtle and gross body, then the sky within the pot merges with the sky outside the pot. They become one. So this is their understanding. But actually that doesn't happen, because again, if you look at the molecules, they never merge. The little particles of sunshine, they're very, very small, those molecular particles. But they have they maintain their individual nature and their individual characteristics or potencies. So, for instance, certain aspects of the sunshine, they have all different types of X-rays and this rays and gamma rays and so many different rays, although it just appears one, energy, the potencies are different. You can use the energies of sunshine, you can harness it for different things. Similarly, if you take medicine, so herbal medicine, a doctor will know that, you can mix some particular type of herb that may help a person to sleep and reduce anxiety. And then within that mixture, there is also something that may, be doing some other thing that, the person may need some, boost for their immune system. So you mix them together, shake up the bottle, but those potencies will remain intact. One will like to, you know, has a certain potency to do one thing, and you can mix, you know, half a dozen different herbs, and they will have their certain potencies. And together they also may have a certain combined potency like that. So, but to the layman, they think, oh, you know, here's a bottle, it's all mixed up. You know, they cannot perceive, you know, but the, you know, the very well educated person, they can see, no, there is a mixture here. You know, so much, this is what forensic science is based upon, you know, someone was killed. You know, someone looks at the, you know, the body, oh, what happened? You know, in Bali, there's a mother and daughter just died. You know, they had a that healthy, having a happy day. Cab driver was taking them here, there, and everywhere. They went to a restaurant, and a little bit later, they were dead. So they have to examine, you know, what was in their system. So although it appears like blood, for them, they can see. No, there's this. This is there. This is there. They ate this. They had this medication, you know, there was this bug, so many things like that. Although it just appears to be one, like that. So actually, the you know, due to their less intelligence, they cannot understand, they think that, you know, they become one because they're perceiving this from their material intelligence. But actually, the spirit soul does not merge, never merges, always keeps his individual identity as described. You know, Krishna states that in the Bhagavad Gita. Never was there a time that I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. You know, like this. We, you know, we're all individuals in the past, present, and the future. So, and also in Bhagavad Gita 15:7, that the spirit soul, you know, is an eternal fragmental part. It's eternally this, you know, individual soul. It has not been cut off or covered over like that, eternally. So, you know, therefore, they cannot understand Narayan. They think that they are Narayan. The Gyanis, if they come to understand, well, if I am spirit, that means I am Brahman. And the Vedic aphorisms, you know, aham brahmasmi, or I am Brahman. Therefore, and Narayan is Brahman, therefore I must be Narayan. But actually, this desire to be one with Narayan is actually, although it appears to be they're on a spiritual quest, that desire stems from the same material desire to enjoy the material world. That desire is just becomes the goal on the spiritual path in the name of spiritual advancement. So in the material world, everyone is trying to enjoy Lakshmi. You know, if you have the blessings of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, you know, you can have beauty and wealth, education, you know, good birth, good food, nice cars, nice clothes, good job, good bank balance, like this. All the, you know, these are the blessings of Lakshmi. But what happens is that when the kamis become frustrated trying to enjoy Lakshmi, then they take to the spiritual path and they decide, let me become the husband of Lakshmi. I am, first of all, I am worshipping Lakshmi. You please give me these blessings. You know, and somehow they become dissatisfied. So then they decide, I will become the master of Lakshmi, I will become the husband of Lakshmi, I will become Narayan. So, you know, there's a... it is actually that... but they perceive that Narayan is, you know, one, you know, impersonal. So this is what they call Dirija Narayan. This is this term that, you know, is very popular, where coming from the Ramakrishna movement and through Vivekananda, and still... you know, that, and it's there within Christianity as well, that you worship God by serving the poor people. You know, because ultimately God is everything. You know, His form is really imaginary, so you can accept any form is as good as God. You know, to conceive that God has a form, that's imagination. God doesn't have a form. Ultimately, He's impersonal. Therefore, you can imagine, but because He's everything, then, you know, this one is good as God, that is good as God, I am good as God. Therefore, if you want to serve God, you serve the poor person. There is God there. I once went to a interfaith forum, and, you know, they have the significant leaders from the Sikh movement, the Hindus, a couple of Christian, you know, groups, and what have you. And I asked a question to all of them, and I wanted them to answer me. I've done this a couple of times at different interfaith forums, and same question: is God a person? You know. So these are the big leaders. Is God a person, or are we just, you know, ascribing personality to Him because we're on this material platform, and, you know, on the spiritual platform there's no actual personality of God in no form like that? And when I asked that question, one by one, they all said they didn't know. And they rambled on a little bit, but saying, you know, in a roundabout way, without sort of looking stupid, that... you know, to the other people, that they didn't know. These are the heads. These. You know, I was really surprised. You know, these are the heads of the movements. They couldn't say. You know, they had no philosophical, shastric, or, you know, even reasonable basis to say one way or another. They couldn't say. And therefore, even in Christianity, you know, they serve God by serving the poor people, because they can't quite grasp the form of the Supreme Lord. So, but you know, this is, it's rascaldom, because it's another, you know, ploy in order to get money from charity. You know, in the name of Dirija Narayan and serving the poor people, you know, a lot of political goals are achieved. You know, people will throw, you know, massive amount of money into certain countries, their development, and other countries, you know, may go without, you know, any, you know, substantial charity or development. You know, there's a lot of underlying political maneuvering in from, you know, governments and even religious leaders. At the same time, there is, you know, there is a genuine, some people, you know, they're innocent, they genuinely want to serve God, and they think that that's how you do it. But then, you know, their innocent or genuine sentiments are manipulated by persons who just want to extract money and, you know, for their movement, you know, this mission or that mission. Otherwise, you know, an intelligent person would say, well, you know, if Narayan, if everyone is Narayan, everyone is as good as God, then why Dirija Narayan? Dirija means poor. Why serve the poor Narayan? Why not serve the rich Narayan? They're also Narayan. If you want to serve, if serving God, if God is, you know, we are all ultimately God, why not serve the rich God? Why serve the poor God? You know, what about the cow? What about the cow Narayan? You know, the rich Narayan, the goat Narayan, this Narayan. And they choose, you know, no, just serve this one. This suits our purposes, you know. Don't worry about the others like that. Just serve this particular Narayan. So, you know, that's hypocritical. That means that they actually, their claim to see everything as God, as Narayan, is false. Because they can only see one section as God and others they cannot see. Why the service does not go to the cow Narayan. That means they cannot see. If Narayan is the supreme Brahman and everything is Narayan, then, you know, serve the cow. And I don't mean with peas and carrots. You know, you serve the cow by protecting them. So, but actually, you know, it's very foolish to think that we are Narayan or the husband of the goddess of fortune. Krishna, and we described this last time, Krishna is actually the Narayan, the original Narayan. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, from whom everything emanates. And he is, as described in the Brahma Samhita, he is surrounded by thousands and thousands, millions of Lakshmis who are serving him. You know, Jai Radha Madhava, you know, the husband of the goddess of fortune, Kunja Bihari, Gopi Janna Vallabha. And you know, just like the expansions from the gopis are the queens of Dwarka, Rukmini is the principal queen, and although she is the goddess of fortune, when Krishna was speaking with Rukmini, he was saying, actually, you would have been better off to marry Sisapal, because, you know, he's a great Kshatriya, he has so many different qualities, he listed all these different qualities. You know, I'm a cowherd boy, you know, I have so many faults, this, that and the other like that. I think, you know, better you've made the wrong choice. You've made the wrong choice, actually. And I think you should have married Sisapal. So she became so fearful, just thinking that what if Krishna actually left, that she just fainted. So, you know, this is the position of Krishna, even above Narayan. You know, that Krishna is served by hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis, and, you know, the goddess of fortune in the form of Rukmini is fearful that Krishna may leave. So this is his position, and what is our position? That, you know, we are, you know, bowing down and praying for millions of lifetimes for a small favor from the goddess of fortune. You know, this is our position. And after millions and millions of lifetimes, then, you know, begging for a small favor, and even if we get that small favor from the goddess of fortune, we're still, you know, because we're asking for material favors, we're still left frustrated, unhappy, and therefore we expand that. So now I will become God. I will become, you know, the husband of the goddess of fortune. So, you know, our position is very ludicrous compared to, you know, Krishna or compared to Narayan. So actually our position is that we are a tiny little part, just like, you know, one drop of the ocean, one particle of sunshine, or, you know, the finger of the body. It is meant to serve. This is our eternal position. But as long as we have these different material desires, which are even up to the point of liberation. You know, when Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that you give up you surrender unto me, giving up all other works, he includes dharma, artha, karma, and moksha, even up to moksha. That desire for liberation to become one with God also has to be given up. All of those, dharma, artha, karma, and moksha, all have to be given up. There's only one should surrender to Krishna as the eternal servant of the Supreme Lord. We can never become one with the Supreme Lord. That is, a mental concoction. That is, that the intelligence is still bewildered. So, you know, they are, in the scriptures, it describes that even if you compare Brahma or Shiva, what to speak of other demigods? If you compare Brahma, Shiva, or any demigod to be equal, or even all of them combined, to be equal with Narayan, you are an atheist and a great offender. And they're comparing the poor man on the street that he is one with Narayan. How ludicrous. How ridiculous. There is no, you know, there is no Shastric injunction that can, support that ludicrous. You know, in fact, there is every Shastric injunction. One should never think like that. But these desires for, you know, material enjoyment and even up to liberation, they can be dissolved by devotional service. Just as Prabhupada describes, just if one has a very strong fire of digestion, you know, they can just eat, you know, they eat so many things, and it all just becomes digested nicely, you know. So by bhakti, it actually dissolves the gross and subtle bodies. One becomes mukta purush, or jivan mukta, that even while within this body, actually one is operating as a spirit soul, you know, not as a material body. One becomes transcendental to the material existence, as described in the Matraspa Sastra Kuntaya Sitoshna Sukutukata Agamapin on the Tas Tomstik Titikshasva Bharata, that this non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and the disappearance in due course of time, like the appearance and disappearance of the winter and summer seasons, that arise from sense perception. So we understand, I am a spirit soul. There is water, cold water. Because I have a material body, in the summer, this cold water is very pleasing. And in the winter, this cold water is giving me great distress. But I'm only feeling happiness and distress because I have a material body. But because I am a spirit soul, I have nothing to do with the happiness and distress produced by the cold water in the changing seasons. So one becomes liberated, you know, one becomes, and because one's mind is always absorbed in Krishna, one's focus is not on that happiness and distress. So, you know, even, you know, there are different degrees of liberation. But sometimes devotees are so absorbed in their service, so absorbed in Krishna consciousness as they become more and more advanced, their focus is just, the concept of happiness and distress, they can't understand. And that's, you know, their only concern is Krishna happy. You know, the concept, am I happy or distressed, doesn't even register. You know, they're just simply absorbed so much. And you see devotees like that. They're blissfully, you know, engaged in Krishna consciousness. And, you know, what may be happiness and distress, they're not. You know, they go, just like Harinam, people go out, they go out in Harinam. They go out in the winter, they go out in the summer. They're always in ecstasy because they're just absorbed in the kirtan. And you look at the materialist, oh, you know, it's a miserable day. You know, clouds, you know, they wake up, they look at the sky. Oh, God, it's one of those days, you know, like that. And they're disturbed, they're under the modes. You know, the sun comes out, oh, you know. They're all, you know, big smiley faces. Sun goes down. But devotees, you know, they're absorbed in kirtan. So, you know, their happiness and distress is not from sense perception by the service of the Lord. So, but this, you know, this concept of serving the Supreme Lord, that is only understood by devotional service. Therefore, Krishna says, you know, I am speaking this ancient science to you, Arjuna, because you are my devotee and my very dear friend. Therefore, you have the qualification. You're completely qualified. I'm not speaking because you're a great pundit of the Vedas, a great jnani, a great ascetic, a great this. I'm speaking, you're a devotee, and therefore you'll understand. Just, you know, just like there are so many different, you know, sound waves that, you know, travel through the air. If you have the radio, the transistors, they used to call them, the wireless, they used to call it, or, you know, the you know, these days, an iPod, what have you, you know, you can tap in to that sound which is actually floating past. The sound of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, these are coming from the spiritual world. And what is the tuning device to capture that? That is bhakti. That is the apparatus. It is there. It's within the heart. If that is there, you can capture that sound and understand it. Otherwise, you cannot capture it. You cannot get the right reception of that. So, therefore, even the biggest scholars and pundits, even if they're reading the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, they actually, without bhakti, they cannot understand it. It is like licking the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, it's like, you know, they can lick the outer jar of the honey. You know, it's a sealed jar. And, you know, they can lick the jar, but there's no taste. You know, you cannot experience the honey by just licking the outside of the jar. The devotee, they know how to open that jar and distribute like that, by bhakti. Otherwise, there is no taste. Even they are huge, big scholars. Their knowledge has been stolen by illusion, because there is no bhakti there. And therefore, Krishna appeared because the devotees, they're not after any material desires, they're not after liberation. They understand their goal, as described in this verse, is to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead eternally. And therefore, whether they're here in the material world or in the spiritual world, they're always trying to glorify the Lord and in this way serve Him by spreading His glories and helping people to go back to the spiritual world. You know, that is that brings them great satisfaction and bliss. The non-devotees, even if they're reading, you know, therefore Krishna actually appeared and gave the devotees so many different, you know, pastimes. He revealed His form, so the form of the Lord is there within the scriptures. And then Krishna appears Himself and says, you are speculating, you know, God is like this, God is like that, here I am, now just see. And God does this and God doesn't do that. Well, here I am, here are my activities. And he's killing so many demons and giving so much pleasure to all his devotees like this. So the devotees have so much information by, through the Shastra and Krishna's appearances to glorify him and to serve him. But we see that in Krishna Leela, the demons like Kamsa, their only business was to kill Krishna. They're always thinking about Krishna, but their only business is to kill Krishna. And therefore sending so many different agents, so many different demons, you know, to kill Krishna. So when people read the Bhagavad Gita, the non-devotees, actually that they're like Kamsa. That's their business. They read the Bhagavad Gita, they translate the Bhagavad Gita, they distribute the Bhagavad Gita just to kill, with the purpose of killing Krishna. Prabhupada says their sole purpose is to evade bhakti. You know, evade, you know, to avoid it. It's like I was talking with, we went to a home program the other day, and there was two brothers, one was the elder brother and one was the younger brother. The younger brother has been associating with devotees, and he's reading the Bhagavad Gita and getting so much, you know, wanting to learn, you know, from the beginning how to serve Krishna. And his elder brother had come over from India, and he's sort of, you know, getting caught up also in that bhakti. But, you know, I was explaining in a little talk before the Jagya that, you know, people, you know, read so many different editions of the Gita, but you won't find that they're glorifying Krishna. And he was saying, yes, I have, I said, do you read Gita? And he said, yeah, I read Gita. I said, but do you read Prabhupada's Gita? And they, oh, yeah. No, I said, no, the Prabhupada's Gita, and I showed him the picture, major, oh, no, not that one. You know, no, not that. But I have a condensed one. All of Krishna's rules and regulations. Like this, you know. So, you know, they will do things like that. They will remove the glories of Krishna's, you know, that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they will put his rules and regulations in there, like it's a book of Proverbs or something. You know, very skillfully, in the name of, you know, presenting Krishna's Gita, they've actually removed the essential part that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they have the different rules and regulations. So people think, well, here are some rules and regulations, there are some rules and regulations. But that they've not read, because they've condensed it and removed the essence of Krishna as God. You know, you know, that is their purpose. You know, that men like Kamsa, to, you know, to kill Krishna. So these temples, you know, this section of the Bhagavatam, of course, we've been hearing how, you know, there are many different Vedic yajnas or sacrifices. And here Prabhupada is saying that ultimately, even though one is worshipping various demigods, the ultimate purpose is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Personality of Godhead, Narayan or Krishna. That even all the demigods, in this chapter we see that the various you know, demigods, they are also worshipping the Supreme Lord, Narayan, in order to derive their abilities to perform their functions. The demigods are completely dependent upon the Supreme Lord. That is what we're hearing, the Purusha Shukta confirm. So sometimes, you know, in just like when we do a fire jagya, we also, you know, there are certain mantras and you're saying Agni, and, you know, you recite various mantras to, you know, various demigods. They're part of the mantras that are there in Gopalabhata Goswami's, you know, Shastra for how devotees perform, you know, worship of the Lord without offense by worshipping demigods. And yet the names of the demigods are still there, because just like you offer things into the fire, so Agni is there. But Agni, you know, will receive And that offering is meant to go to the Supreme Lord Narayan. Just like I was explaining to a little girl the other day, she's nine, she asked me about Ganesh, why do we worship Ganesh? And I was saying, well, and her father was there, he couldn't answer. I said, well, it's just like if you want to give, say, a donation, you want to offer respect and a big donation to the President of America, you can't just walk up to him and give him, $500,000. You actually first have to offer respect to his representatives, and they have to see that you have the proper respect for the president. You're not some rascal who's going to cause him trouble. And even if you have the money to give, they may not accept it. They may not want to be affiliated with that sort of where that money comes from. If it comes from drugs or, this one or that one. There's no you just walk up, because he's the president, oh, I've got $1 million, here, take it. You have to actually properly show due respect to, certain personalities on the way up. And ultimately your goal may be to, give respect and, service to the president. So Ganesh is like that. Therefore, in the nectar devotion, it mentions that you can worship Ganesh, at the beginning of worshipping the deities. We don't follow that very much at all in ISKCON. But, it's a principle it's not against devotional principles to, just we worship the guru. And the guru is a representative of all the demigods. But in that sense, sometimes in the Vedic mantras, we are going through various demigods with the goal of achieving the result of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is not an offence. And similarly, in performing ceremonies, many of the people who come to, even to the temple, so here we're worshipping Radha Krishna. Now, a huge percentage of people who come to worship the deities, they're not coming here to do bhakti. They come here to pray, many people who call themselves Vaishnavas, you ask them, I worship Vishnu, I worship Krishna. Oh, and we think, oh, Vaishnava. But Prabhupada says, Vaishnavas, there's a variety of them, they're Mayavadis. They're Mayavad Vaishnavas. Because they see that, I worship Vishnu as equal with Ganesh and the sun god and Durga and Shiva. They're equal. So they come to the temple in that mood. And they're praying, just as they prayed in the Durga temple, that, I want this for my, children, good education, nice bank balance, so many different things. They come and pray like that. Now, because we are maintaining the deities, does that mean that we are also impersonalists? Or that we're cultivating their fruit of activities? Shaking your head? Anyone think we do? No. Why? Is because everyone that comes, we take the first opportunity to try and teach them the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Gradually diverting them towards bhakti. They come for so many different reasons. And we allow that. We allow people to come for their fruit of activities to worship the Lord and the deity. For some of them are coming to become one with God. They come in. Are we maintaining? Does that mean that we are condoning or utilizing the deities for fruit of activities or, people to be... No, we're not. Our goal is that whoever comes, we divert them at the first opportunity to bhakti. We try to attract them to chanting the holy names. We try to understand, teach them about deity worship. This is, Krishna will accept, he's a person, this is his form, this is how he appeared, like this. They hear Srimad Bhagavatam, they take prasadam, they do a little service. People come along and because they're hearing and chanting from the Suddha Bhaktas, the pure devotees, you know, devotees who are following the path of pure devotional service, they gradually become attracted. Then they come, and then instead of coming just to pray for some material benefit, they're coming, I want to do some service. And gradually, like this, they become more and more bhaktas and bhaktins, like that. So similarly, you know, even with fire juggers, it is the same. You know, people, so, you know, in this verse, I know it's very heavily accented that, sacrifices are condemned and not performed. You know, so we don't do them. We don't do any fruitive activities. We don't do any, you know, juggers for fruitive activities. Or the only, you know, juggers which are done from Mayapur to Melbourne, you know, you Vrindavan, you go to any temple in the world, you see, they're performing juggers. None of them are performed for fruitive activities. None of them are ever cultivating material activities or persons' desires to become one or liberate or anything. The fire is another deity of the Lord, and it is the same principle. The fire has this benefit. Srila Prabhupada mentioned that sometimes when people, you know, neophytes, because, you know, neophytes means prakriti, they're very materialistic, either in their conception or their desires. It's very important for them to worship the deities. You know, it actually gradually, you know, helps them to, you know, advance in Krishna consciousness. They gain, you know, spiritual piety from that, which gradually helps them to understand and purifies them. Sometimes when they understand that we're offering food to the deities, they can't understand how the Lord's accepting it, because they see that we put the plate there and then the Vajari come and take the plate off and the food's still there and then it went back into the kitchen. And Prabhupada mentions that. That, you know, some of them, they're so, their lack of understanding of the deities is like that. They can't perceive that. Well, you know, it just, you know, they're doing something but nothing really happened. Their food's there. He said, but when those people sit in a fire jagya and you offer food, they see the Lord eating it. It actually helps them. You put the food in and they think, oh, the food's been eaten by the fire. For some people, it's actually even a preliminary understanding of deity worship that helps them then to, you know, advance to deity worship in the temple, because they can, you know, see like that. But it is the same principle that, you know, these Hare Krishna temples that Srila Prabhupada established all over the world are for that benefit, that for, you know, understanding Krishna, understanding Narayan or Vishnu, what to speak of Krishna, even understanding Vishnu or Narayan is extremely rare and difficult. And these centers attract people by the hundreds, by the thousands, just for the purpose, for one purpose, helping them to go back to Godhead by gradually making them attracted to bhakti. They come with so many other things in their heart, but the devotee, this is described in the Harinam Chintamani, the devotee has the ability, they divert them. They come with some purpose and the devotee is diverting them to Krishna, bhakti. So that is the purpose. So Krishna, the original Narayan, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we should try to help. And the best service to Narayan or Krishna is to help other people go back to Godhead, help other people, you know, come to the platform of Suddha Bhakti. Not worshipping Krishna for material desires, not worshipping Krishna for liberation, but just worshipping Krishna out of love, out of Prema Bhakti, pure love. You know, and that is what these Krishna consciousness centers are about. And every activity performed in these centers is for that sole purpose. Any questions or comments? Yes. Yeah, there's a verse in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam which states exactly that. That, you know, because I think it's spoken in relationship to this, that anyone who comes into this world, we're indebted to so many people. We're indebted to our parents, our forefathers, the sages, the scriptures, you know, the demigods. Whatever we have, someone has given us. We come into this world with nothing, and then so many people are supplying us and helping us to advance and progress. So we're indebted. But one who surrenders to the Supreme Lord, they're not indebted to anyone, not any, even the demigods, the forefathers, or anyone at all. They surrender, their debt is relinquished completely. And the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the spiritual master, and therefore all the demigods are perfectly satisfied and perfectly worshipped by worshipping the spiritual master, the representative of the personality of Godhead. Yeah, that's I was atheist till I found I was God. That's it. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I like that. I'll use it in class one day if you don't mind. Yeah. Mm. Yoga means to link or to add, just add Krishna. We have so many zeros, we just add Krishna and then it becomes valuable. Yoga means to link with the Supreme. So you can link with the Supreme through karma yoga. You can link with the Supreme through, you know, jnana yoga, stanga yoga or bhakti yoga. Krishna says that the one who is in bhakti yoga is the most intimately linked, connected. So they're all linked. You know, some have a very loose grip on the Supreme. You know, some a little stronger, but the devotees, they're fixed, you know, eternally at the lotus feet of the Lord. Others, even they become linked, but because it's to something impersonal, as Brahma says, they can fall down from that position. Their link is not very secure. Okay? So bhakti is a very secure link. Because, when you become a devotee, you know, the others are trying to link with the Supreme by their own prowess. A devotee surrenders to the Supreme Lord, and Krishna, takes a hold of that devotee. So therefore, Prabhupada says that, you know, he asks the question that what is better, the cat is carried in the mouth, the kitten is carried in the mouth by the cat, the mother. Or the monkey is carried on the back of the mother monkey. Now, which is better? Prabhupada says that the cat, because the mother is doing the work. The mother is holding the baby. The little kitten doesn't have to do any work. Whereas the monkey, they're hanging on by his own strength, which is, you know, dangerous. So in other processes of yoga, they don't have that strong link because, you know, in bhakti, Krishna, you know, he's embracing that devotee with his whole spiritual potency. Therefore, we pray, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare. You know, you place me under the protection, of your spiritual potency, like that. A devotee is very securely embraced by Krishna's spiritual potency, whereas even up to liberation and even with liberation, the effects of the material energy impeding the connection, the link. See? So just like, if you take a magnet and you have some rusty nails, you know, some rusty metal, the magnet cannot properly, there's a connection, but it's a loose connection. Same strength of magnet, you know, but then if you polish those metal, same strength of magnet, very firm connection. So bhakti is like that. It polishes the mirror of the mind, makes it completely pure. Even there's not even material desire gone, even you know, desire for liberation, everything gone, all the rust gone, firmly, you know, and the magnet is holding, you know, very strongly like that. So, you know, even up to the point of liberation, there's still some rust in the heart, some covering that has to be, you know, cleansed away then, you know. So, the one who is most intimately linked is the bhakti, bhakta, the bhakta, the bhakti. They are most intimately linked. Otherwise, they're all yogis. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Jai, all glory to Prabhupada.